heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
President Trump ran on a platform of law and order. Everybody knows that. I mean, that was from the very beginning. He created some real relationships and roots with both law enforcement and our military. That happened early on. And that wasn't unusual for a president that ran as more of a nationalist and a patriot, if you will. It made a lot of sense that he aligned himself with those forces. Now, let's keep in mind, the president of the United States is the commander-in-chief of the United States military. He is the man who has the final say. That's always been our tradition here. It's not specifically Congress or the Supreme Court or someone else. It is the president of the United States who is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. Now, putting that into context a moment here, many times when you see countries that crumble or fall apart, one of the things you see immediately is a spat or a major problem with the military and the whoever the leader is or leaders are. That, you know, you see that crumble, fall apart, and then you have a takeover, what you would call a coup d'etat. Now, in this particular case, you know, you've been hearing those words a lot in the past few years, a potential coup d'etat here in America. But this is more with the former president, Congress, operatives at the FBI, all kinds of creatures and characters that are involved. So, but that's not really what we're talking about here today, people. What we're talking about now is, and I'm hearing this in my ear from a lot of people who are very concerned, does the president still have the relationship with the United States military that you would hope he did have? Now, you might say, why do you say that? Why do you ask that question? Well, you see the spat that has come up with General Mattis, Mad Dog, yeah, and Kelly, General Kelly, who was chief of staff there, of course. And both generals are a very big part of his administration. Now, if you remember early on, the president took great pride in having generals involved with his administration. You remember that. You've seen the sound bites and the talking points. I mean, the president was thrilled, and he surrounded himself with a fair amount of generals, in fact. And that was sort of one of the accolades he put out about his administration. He applauded the generals. He celebrated the generals. He talked very highly of the generals and felt that they would be good leaders for his administration. So that was part of the leadership he surrounded himself with. Well, all that seems to have changed. You've seen the comments that Mattis and Kelly came up with. Kelly supported Mattis. Mattis initially took the stand and kind of rebuked Trump and said he did not care for what he was doing here in Minneapolis. A lot more graphic and points that he made there when he wrote his piece on it. But I think it gets a little peculiar now, people, the relationship. And then on top of that, you see when the president called, I mean, and this was a huge story, people, that got, it was so overplayed, this part of the story here, that it's hard to put into context exactly. But that's when he was going to invoke the Insurrection Act of 1807, remember? That, and the president had put that out there just to remind people, and it's been done before with prior presidents, but he didn't say he was going to use the military. But listen, you give that soundbite out there, and the media ran with that three times to Sunday. They took that and they said, oh, the president's going to go after the protesters with the military. Oh, and that's kind of what the media started beating the drum with, you see? And that's what got this whole thing fueled up, was the Insurrection Act of 1807. Would President Trump use it? That's been used before, people. This is not the first time in our history that it's been used. But the circumstances that was put forth was that, you know, many of the media, they positioned it as the president was going to use them to go after the protesters, the so-called, and I put my hands up in quotes, peaceful protesters, you see? Yeah. And of course, I mean, we could argue how peaceful these protests and riots have been over the past couple of weeks, I am sure. I want to talk about that today with you, friends. And I want to do it with Del Wilber. Interesting op-ed he had has right now on America Out Loud. Time for Madison Kelly to listen to MacArthur. It was a well-written piece, an op-ed, I thought, really raised eyebrows, you know. Now, Dell is a former CIA and Department of Defense Intelligence and Counterterrorism officer. He is a writer, a columnist, and a commentator thinker. So, Dell, as I look at the article and I start to see some of your position in here, there's a whole narrative here I want to get into. We'll get back to more of the general military feeling and if Trump is at risk in a moment. But you say here this, my question to Generals Mattis and Kelly is, were things better under Barack Obama and Joe Biden? Did you agree with Barack Obama's fundamental transformation of the United States? Dale, how do you think, in your opinion, the generals would answer that? Sincerely, I mean, you put the questions out there. How do you think in your heart Mattis and Kelly would answer the question you put out there? Did they agree with Obama's fundamental transformation of the United States?
Well, I mean, my short answer would be that if they are true American patriots, then they certainly did not agree with Barack Obama. You know, what he tried to do to this country was to move it so far to the left that it is or would have been unrecognizable as the free United States that we have fought and that many in the military, in the Marine Corps, fought to defend, you know, since our nation's inception.
You know, this whole thing that came up with Madison Kelly was a bit of a surprise that Mattis had. What do you think provoked Mattis? I mean, what got under his skin so much? Was it the Insurrection Act? Was it something out of context? What do you think did that initially for him to speak out like he did?
It's a personal dislike for Donald Trump. I mean, I think that's what it boils down to. You know, there's a lot of people out here that just simply don't like the guy. He doesn't play by the same playbook, as I mentioned in my column. Trump doesn't follow the same playbook that career military officers who have been around as long as Mattis and Kelly and others, that they follow, that they're used to following. You know, one thing about the military that people need to understand is there's a lot of resistance to change. I mean, look how long it took for the military to accept full integration of the races. I mean, it took raising of colored regiments during the Civil War. And then following that, I mean, the military was segregated through World War II. Finally, President Truman integrated the military. I guess it was after World War II. It was early on in the Korean War, and even then, black soldiers were discriminated against by their white commanding officers. So, change. You know, the military is not readily open to change, and I think that's part of the problem when you have someone like Donald Trump who comes in and he. Like you said, he doesn't play by the same playbook.
Yeah. The military has been being used as a social experiment for some time, Dale. I mean, you bring up some points here about even blacks and whites and this, but then it became gender, became, you know, transgender, women, all kinds of homosexuals in the military, just all kinds of things. And that became an argument, a few years back, right? About using the military as a social experiment, correct?
But in my mind anyway, there is a huge difference between integration, of the races into the military and that. That is a whole lot different than sexual orientation or something of that nature, because – a person's sexuality that is a much more personal thing than, you know, just someone's skin color in allowing them to serve openly in the military. So, I'm sure that there are others out there who will argue against that perspective and say that that there is no difference. But in my mind, there is. I mean, our sexuality, our being is much more personal to us than just, like you said, have someone working with or serving with someone of a different skin color. And I think that's why there's been resistance in the military to some of the social changes that were being forced upon them under the 8 years of Obama.
Yeah. And you can hide your sexual orientation far better than you can hide your skin color, Del. You know that.
Well, certainly. And, and whether it's right or wrong, I don't, I'm not going to get into that argument. But the point is that our military's purpose is to defend this country, to knock things down if they have to. Mm-hmm. And, you don't tinker with something that is a well-oiled machine that's doing the job well. I mean, under Colin Powell, the don't ask, don't tell policy was working fine. And there was no need to change it, because what they were trying to do was to, in my mind anyway, what Obama was trying to do was to generate more acceptance of the LGBTQ, whatever community it is. He was trying to generate more acceptance of that in society by forcing it upon the military, whose job isn't to change society's perception of anything.
Well, back to what I just said a moment ago about a social experiment, and that's what was happening. That was the dialogue back then when that happened, don't ask, don't tell, and what you just said about Powell. But, what's happened is in America now, and I've been talking to listeners about this for some time, and really what's going on here is nothing is sacred anymore, Del. There's nothing in the closet anymore. What America does now is it throws its laundry, its dirty laundry, out on the sidewalk, and you're supposed to accept it. And if you don't like it, tough shit. So if you don't like it, that's what's happening now in our society. Everything is thrown out there. This is the politically correct environment that has been pushed down people's throats over the last, really, 25 plus years, certainly under the last 10. What do you say to that?
Well, I agree. I agree exactly with what you said in that. I mean, it is, accept it or else. And, we're going to come against you. You're going to lose government contracts, or you're going to, our state is no longer going to do business with your state and approve travel to your state because you have a protection of marriage, clause in your state constitution. Yeah. It's been ridiculous in that. But, to go back to the point about, Madison Kelly and that, as I said, I think it is they simply have a personal dislike against President Trump. They don't like his personality. He's brash. He's irritating at times. And, he irritates the hell out of me sometimes with some of the things he does.
Yeah.
But I also understand what he's doing. He's changing this country from, go along to get along. To actually trying to do what's right for the country, and what has been missing in our political leadership for decades.
Do the generals see President Trump as a threat?
I don't. If they do, they're crazy, because he's not threatening the Constitution or anything. In fact, as I mentioned in my column, the person who threatened the Constitution was Barack Obama. He basically complained about the Constitution, preventing him from doing some of the things that he wanted to do, and then he boldly stood up in front of everybody and said, "Hey, I've got an ink pen. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want," and he commenced to do that. And so, I don't know where they're coming from that Trump, threatens the Constitution at all, because they're paying more attention to how things he says and does are distorted by the news media than what he actually says or intends. And, it's in my mind, it's intellectual weakness on their part.
Well, let me read you this from NBC News just the other day here. This is plays into what we're speaking about. More than 280 retired diplomats, generals, and senior national security officials on Friday called on President Donald Trump not to use the U.S. military for political ends, warning American democracy was at risk. Now, the quote here, let me read this. As former American ambassadors, generals, and admirals, and senior federal officials, we are alarmed by calls from the president and some political leaders for the use of U.S. military personnel to end legitimate protests. Now, they're calling these legitimate protests in cities and towns across America. These were all the former officials. This was a statement posted on the Just Security website. And it listed authors as retired senior diplomats, Douglas Silliman, Deborah McCarthy, Thomas Countryman, a whole bunch of different folks that have good reputations out there. We're concerned about the use of U.S. military assets to intimidate and break up peaceful protest in Washington, they wrote. Now, listen, I think one of the first things you have to talk about is, you know, you see the images of the scenes that are playing out from sea to shining sea. And I think it would be a hell of an argument to call these uprisings and riots peaceful. I've seen a lot of images, Dale, but I mean, the peaceful were not where the focus was. In fact, every day when the sun went down, it got really vicious. And anything that quasi looked even peaceful in the light of day, quickly in the moment of dark or dusk, became an all-out brawl, burning city, town, center squares, breaking everything in the place, abusing people, throwing bricks, pallets of bricks being delivered by operatives so that these radical extremist groups could throw them at police and law enforcement and first responders and through store windows and bust everything up. I mean, this is not just in one town or one city. It permeated from the epicenter in Minneapolis and then struck so many cities and towns from coast to coast. And certainly a lot of many people would call blue cities and towns that are governed by Democrat mayors and governors. So the fact that they're, number one, calling it peaceful is really a ruse. It's not being called. They're not looking like they're peaceful. Are they, number one? And number two, what do you think about this warning here about American democracy being at risk if he had used the act?
I think they're crazy because, as you mentioned in your opening comments, the Insurrection Act has been used multiple times into recent years. Recent administrations have used it, you know, to respond to specific threats or whatever. So the fact that it's even being mentioned is certainly not controversial at all. And if they say it is, then they're bold-faced lying because that's not correct. You know, after a president leaves office, everybody writes a book. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody, that's you right. know, goes out and you know, gives an inside look at what happened during mm-hmm. that administration.
Right.
The difference is that this administration is still in office. It is still going on. And I have lost a great deal of respect for Mattis and Kelly. Honestly, and certainly this is self-serving, but when President Trump first appointed them, announced that that they were going to be holding mm-hmm. senior positions in his administration, I wasn't sure that it was a good idea at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can say that now, you know, because of the benefit of hindsight, but you know, I think it was a mistake then. I even mentioned not long ago that I felt that to friends of that getting the U.S. military involved in a street protest and that I felt was not a wise move. I think it, you know, I felt that it should have been dealt with differently up to the point that these demonstrations, these riots pose a threat to the national security of our country. Then using the military to return peace to the streets and that certainly might be an option that has to be considered if it continues. But, you know, certainly the peaceful protests are protected by the Constitution and they're not a problem.
Right, but that wasn't the problem with the uprising and the riots. It was clearly far more than what you're speaking about, because it became unruly quickly, and they became massive riots, and with a lot of damage being done. And by the way, this is right after a lockdown pandemic, which has devastated economically many of these local business communities. There has been an unprecedented amount of companies, organizations that are in dire needs right now. They've either, you know, gone out of business, or they filed bankruptcy protection or something else. And you're seeing it both large and small. And it's because of the double whammy of the lockdown pandemic and then all of this damage and uprising and riots that are happening all over the country here. With the military now, many people are questioning, does the president still have the loyalty and the commitment from the military? Because when you have generals like that speak out, typically that they have a lot of influence in the ranks of the military. And so you begin to question it. I know people are questioning me. Do you think the president still has? And they're legitimately concerned. These are people that are really concerned for the health and well, because we haven't seen this play out before in our country, people. And that really is the point here. So we'll take a pause a moment here. We'll be back with Del Wilbur in just a moment.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. We're talking about the Insurrection Act, and the last president, by the way, to use this authority was George H.W. Bush, the first Bush in office. He used it in 1992, you probably recall this, with the riots in Los Angeles. That's where they were used last. Now, it's been considered many times since then. It's been used before. H.W. Bush was not the first. But it's, you know, his George W., his son, almost used it with Katrina because things were getting pretty bad there. He almost enacted the Insurrection Act there because things were getting really messy down there in the New Orleans area, you may recall, with that. So that was another moment there that it could have been used. But for whatever reason, there's an insecurity with President Trump. Part of the reason maybe will be because he's been branded as a, they've got him, the media has got him branded as a quasi-dictator. They've got him as a man not really for liberty. And they've been beating this drum, Dell, for really the last 4 years. And they've been beating it hard and consistently, really. So here's the thing I want to ask you. This is important here because people have been asking me these questions, and I don't have the answers, but you as a military guy and as a former CIA guy, you can answer this better than I. I asked you moments ago here, do the generals see Trump as a threat? And let me go further with that now and ask you, the influence of the generals in putting that out there, do you get any bit of queasiness or uncomfortableness at all in seeing, has the military, by any degree or stretch of the imagination, have they lost any momentum or respect for President Trump, do you think? Has this done any damage within the ranks of the military, I'm asking?
My opinion is no. I was an enlisted man many, many moons ago when I was in the Army. What the general said, you know, didn't really matter too much to me. It was the, of course the, I went in right at the, towards the end of the Vietnam War, and, there was a lot of anger at, you know, at what the you know, what the policymakers and what the senior leadership in the military had, you know, had done during the preceding years with regards to Vietnam. So I would be surprised if the frontline troops right now, if they paid a heck of a lot of attention to what two, you know, retired Marine Corps generals had to say. They're more concerned about how President Trump has supported them, mm-hmm. because they're the ones that do the fighting and dying, certainly not the generals. And, you know, President Trump has, you know, has made the moves to limit our, you know, these foreign excursions that we've been involved in now for 20 years. And to give the troops the, you know, the pay raise that they deserve, to give the troops the equipment that they need, mm-hmm. you know, things that weren't done under previous administrations. And, you know, where was General Mattis and General Kelly, you know, speaking out against Barack Obama's evisceration of the military? Where were they then? You know, where were they demanding that, you know, that the troops be given the pay raise they deserved? And, you know, so I don't think that the ground or the first frontline troops in that, I don't think they pay a heck of a lot of attention to what General Mattis or Kelly or any other retired general, you know, might have to say.
So you believe he still has the respect and that relationship with the United States military then? You're comfortable?
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a matter of opinion, but I, you know, I think I'm close enough to mm-hmm. To those that serve in a variety of capacities. Certainly from the agency, there's not many people I've talked to that have any use for John Brennan. So, you know, it's like I said, it's a matter of opinion, but I think I'm pretty on target with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing with what you say there. Even Secretary of Defense Mark Esper, remember, he came out and he broke ranks. This was really an eye-opener. And, of course, the media started talking immediately about, oh, he's at odds with his cabinet and he's going to probably get rid of him. What they do in the media is they look for any rift they can, and then they try to create a much bigger wedge out of the little disagreement rift, or meaning that everybody should beat to the same drum and you should never have a difference of opinion. And when somebody does, then it means they're out of lockstep with the administration. And they use that for propaganda purposes because the media picks it up and runs with it. And I mean, Esper came right out and said, and I quote here, the option to use active duty forces in a law enforcement role should only be used as a matter of last resort and only in the most urgent and dire situations. Now, you wonder, Dell, and I wonder, as most people are, like, what would be dire situations and most urgent? So when you're seeing your cities and your towns and your square centers being torched, and I mean really torched, burnt down to the ground, and you're seeing things, and not just one city or town. It's not just one, Dell. It's not just on the West Coast or in the Midwest or in the Northeast. It's everywhere. And you see the uprising happening where it is. And then you see the groups, these insurgent groups that are moving in, the radical groups that are moving in. And they're tearing it all apart and they're infiltrating these radical extremist groups. And we covered a lot of this actually over on the weekend on the news magazine. And, you know, that kind of, I mean, is that not the most urgent and dire situation? Or is that just another normal day in America, I wonder?
Well, you know,
Talk to me.
People have to look at what you know, at what President Trump actually said, and he never ever threatened that he was going to just put him out on the, you know, put the military out on the streets to quell, you know, to quell these peaceful riots.
Yeah.
You know, he himself said, you know, that if this, you know, rebellion, he didn't use that word. That's my word because I think that's what it is. I think it's a and it's been an ongoing coup d'etat for quite some time. But, you know, but he said in if it's necessary. Well, you know, you can read a lot of things into those words if it's necessary. And certainly the news media and his political enemies are going to read in, you know, the words that they want to, you know, that they want to portray him as a, you know, as a crazy man or a dictator or whatever. And so I don't think that that there's any dispute, between him and Secretary Esper. I think they're probably both on the same page. President Trump has no intention of turning the military loose on American citizens. It would be, unconstitutional, and it would be certainly an unwise move politically.
Yeah, that's the jackpot point right there you just made, Del Wilbur. That's exactly it right there. Because what most of his followers, and I would say a good part of America, understand is that President Trump plays chess. And that is his art of the deal. And it's how he operates, Del. It's his whole DNA. He has done this throughout his entire business world and community. He does it in political circles. He throws things out there sometimes as a bait and switch, and he gets you thinking. He has done this with Kim Jong-un. He has done it with Xi Jinping. He has done it with Iran. He has done it with Russia. He has done it with world leaders, Europe. He's done it here locally. He's done it. And you almost think like, okay, he's really, and I understand that strategy because I, as a commentator and as a host and editor in chief here, I do the same thing. I play all sides of a conversation. And just when you think I'm thinking that, I'll pull the rug right out underneath your feet and throw you a curveball real fast or a spitball, Dale. You understand?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I said, just, a few minutes ago, he doesn't follow the same playbook that people in Washington, including politicians, diplomats, and the military, have followed for decades. He's a different animal. And, people have to understand, that he has a different way of doing things. And, politics, diplomats, and the military are resistant to change.
And then you have to wonder why do they play so against it? What does their ideology look like? What kind of an America do they want? And see, this is where I really get where the rubber meets the road. This is the onion I try to peel back for everybody to understand what's really going on here. Now, in order to answer these kinds of questions, you have to get up to 35,000 feet and you have to have an honest, real conversation. Because if you don't, you're not going to get there. Well, here's the thing, in your op-ed, in your article, Del, and this is another important point playing to everything we're talking about here, you say here to Madison Kelly, the generals there, if you're so concerned about the Constitution of the United States that you believe President Trump threatens, then why didn't you express your concerns about the genuine threats to our Constitution that Barack Obama presented? You had plenty of time and opportunity to speak out there. Now, that paragraph stopped me in my tracks because what you said, and I told you afterward, I messaged you and told you this op-ed is a killer message for a lot of reasons, because I read your entire piece up at 35,000 feet, understanding the parameters of the conversation here. And with what you say there, so why didn't they speak out, Dale? So now we can quasi pass that off. What's the ideology behind all of this? Because I'm not just accepting that because Trump is different, that we can play it out this way and we can nail him all the way from three ways down the road here to Sunday. And yet Obama could pull the country into places that, his transformative ideological moment of horror that was put on 325 million Americans. So how does that play out? And what is the real reason that these military leaders like Mattis and Kelly and many others, all these other operatives all over the place, what kind of an ideology in America do they see? And why didn't these people speak up about Barack Obama? Was it because he was the first quasi-supposed black, half-white president in our nation? Was it because that was another form of racism and we had politically correct bullshit out there already? Was that because they really thought that Obama was doing a swell job? Was that because they really had beliefs in his ideology? What are the reasons?
Lack of intestinal fortitude. Let me ask this question. And if they want to speak out against Trump and they want to say that, that they feel he threatens our Constitution, that why aren't they also speaking out against what happened under 8 years of Obama? Why aren't they, making their comments about Trump and carrying it right over to, well, we don't agree with everything Trump's doing, but we also stand firmly against what Barack Obama tried to do to this country and what Joe Biden and his candidacy also threatens to try to do to this country. They're not speaking out against anybody else but Trump, which makes me wonder where their true allegiances lie.
That is exactly it, Wilbur. That's the problem I have right there. We're missing something here, I'm telling you, because we have not been in those meetings. So when we talk about Madison, Kelly, and so many others, we're not a fly on the wall. We wish we were. I'd love to be. I'd love to know what the hell they were really saying behind closed doors. But I get the feeling, I get the sense we're missing something here. I something in my soul tells me there's more to the picture here than we know. And I really feel this is an Alice in Wonderland moment for us. I don't think we're really getting the gospel truth here in any of this. And it worries me a great deal. And that's why I'm uncomfortable. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I think that they are willing to accept anything just because they have such a visceral dislike of Donald Trump. And if they're willing to accept, literally, in my mind, the potential destruction of this country and the freedoms that we hold dear simply because of a personality dispute, then boy, were their promotions to senior rank in the Marine Corps a huge mistake.
You also come out right here and saying you didn't hold back in this op-ed. And folks, if you have not read this, get over to the platform at AmericaOutloud.com and read the piece. It is definitely worth your time. It's called Time for Mattis and Kelly to Listen to MacArthur. You say here something else that was really, you put it out there and you said, so who has posed the greater threat? A duly elected president who has been fighting an ongoing coup d'etat since the day he took office? Or a closet commie rat bastard who is hiding behind the scenes and working hard to undermine his successor's presidency and complete his fundamental transformation of our country? And of course, hiding behind the scenes, that would be with OFA, his whole organization down the street with Valerie Jarrett that he's got there to take over America. He's been working behind the scenes with John Kerry and so many others. But you come right out and you call it a closet commie rat bastard. You really believe that, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, all you have to do is look at his history and how he was raised. I mean, what his parents, ideology was. What he surrounded himself with that ideology. He certainly wasn't honest about it when he first ran for president back in 2008. He covered up. He hid, concealed his true ideology and his true intentions because he knew he couldn't get elected. Okay, but once he got into office, he started to do it as subtly as possible, as he could, through his appointments of different cabinet members and all of his czars that he had. If people look back and recall, he had more appointed czars than any administration ever in history.
That's right.
So, I fully believe that he is behind the scenes. And that's the other thing that bothers me about Mattis and Kelly. They were on the inside. They know. They knew what was going on. They knew what kind of opposition President Trump was up against. And they knew that it was lies. They knew that there was no collusion with Russia. They knew these things, and they knew the daily grind and battle that Trump had to go through, just to try to keep his presidency afloat. And yet they make no mention of that.
Adele, you bring up a big point there, buddy. You just got me really thinking there. Because at any given moment, why didn't they go to a microphone or a camera? You're exactly right. And have a heart-to-heart talk with America. I mean, come on. Adele. I mean, these are, we call them patriots. They're generals. They serve our nation. They understand. You just said a mouthful. Yeah, they knew what was going on. Absolutely. They knew there was no Russia business going on. They knew what was happening. They also knew who was out to get him. But not once did they wage an opinion out there to the public to see that, we as generals and patriots and people who love America, we see what's really going on here. We need to share our truth with the nation. Never happened, did it, Dell?
No, it never did. They sat silently and allowed President Trump to get beaten up every single day by the media, by his political enemies and the Democrat Party. Yeah. And they never once, you know, voiced their full support for him. Which,
so, Dale, how is that patriotic?
Well, it's not. It's not in my mind. You know, it's not in my mind at all. And I'm well, you saw my it's time for them to shut the hell up.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said it. You said it so well. I was so proud that you sent that piece over and didn't hold back, because, Dale, if we don't get to the out loud truth, we're screwed as a nation.
No doubt. No doubt at all.
I mean, that's the point here, buddy. That's what I do every day. This stuff is serious business. I mean, we're not playing hopscotch here in the sun. I mean, this is serious business to try to preserve this republic and all that we hold true. The last point I want to make here is we call this a disruptor president. Now, here's another piece to this, Dale. I'd like you to really want your insight on Colin Powell. You mentioned earlier in the broadcast, and so he is on record now, but Colin Powell has fallen so far from the Republican conservative tree of politics that you can't recognize the man anymore. So he's on the record now to want to vote for Joe Biden. He thinks he's going to be real swell and a great candidate and president to rule and run this nation to pull us forward, which really rattles the mind. And then former President George W. Bush comes out and he says, I will not support the reelection of Trump. And this is just reported, by the way, in the New York Times. And of course, we know the rest of the usual suspects, the Mitt Romneys and the rest of them won't do Trump either. They'll do some, they handwrite a name in there, meaning they're not going to vote for anybody and they're going to be a wimp at the end of the day. So this is a disruptor president. You see the establishment and all of these people running like cockroaches, and it's not even in the middle of night. It's in daylight here, totally here. What gives here?
Well, President Trump threatens the status quo. As I said, these people are used to politics as usual that have been practiced for decades. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've enriched themselves. They've lined their own pockets. They've pursued pet projects and, you know, with little or no opposition. You know, it's the old smoke-filled room, slap on the back, good old boy network. And I think, you know, they're genuinely concerned that Trump is going to upset their apple cart. And so that's why they oppose him. And I put a lot of faith. I hope and pray that Durham is able to reveal a lot of information, and that's going to show that there's misconduct riddled throughout our government and our politics.
Yeah. Isn't that possibly one of the reasons, Dell, with the John Durham report supposedly coming, that there's such a need to get Trump out of office in 2020?
Absolutely. I'm convinced of that. They are scared to death that their acts, activities, and their misconduct and their, you know, their just their I'm at a loss for words because I'm so angry about this whole situation. And like I said, there it's going to be uncovered, and you know, there's going to be a lot of I think a lot of people that are going to be viewed in a much different light than they are right now.
That's right. Very possibly. Well, the good thing, my friends, our listeners here at America Out Loud, is that your humble host here is never lost for words. So, big thank you here to Del Wilbur. And I'll tell you what, a whole lot more Voice of a Nation in just a moment.
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
What's behind all of this? It's almost like we're missing something. Okay, so Trump is brass. Okay, we got that. He is unpredictable. Okay? He's the disruptor president. So is it just that they've had their way for so long that for, what, 244 years now, the establishment, and it's not for the whole 244 years, clearly, but we've gotten to this point now, and it's been building for a long time, a very long time, a good part of the last century. We've become unraveled, and we seem to be not moving the nation forward to a place that we wish to move the nation forward, not as much as we did prior to that. It's been a tough, you know, few administrations here with Bush, Clinton, Bush, and Obama that brought Trump into office. In fact, I would beg to differ and say that we would have never had a President Trump. He would have never been elected. I don't believe, because of his brassness and where he is, America probably would not have given him the keys to the car if things were in such bad shape. And I think the nation got to a point where a good part of America and middle America stood up and said, you know, enough is enough. Enough is enough. I mean, they've seen the erosion of our manufacturing in middle America pulled out. We have seen us bow down to nations around the world. We've seen America become part of this one world government globalist movement. I mean, it's out there, people. And I'm not a conspiracy guy. You know that. I didn't even really believe at one point about the whole globalist movement until you really understand what's happening. At some point, you have to look beyond the tea leaves and really understand what's happening here. What's the motive behind this? And that's, I think, what we do well here, is look to see what is really the story. What's the motive? You know, and that can be a tricky place to be, getting up to 35,000 feet and understanding the score. Because all too often, we're lost in the midst of the conversation and what's happening in the news cycle, and we get lost in the weeds of trying to make our point and feel good, and that we really lose sight of what the stakes are, you see. And I think that's where America was back in 2015. I really applaud middle America. In fact, I'll tell you what, it's really what gives me hope and optimism at this point. It really what gives me encouragement. And now the real test of time is going to be 2020. It's going to be I got to tell you what, it is a moment in time, if there ever was, for this nation. And it's not just to say that. It is because it is. When you see the kind of people coming out against Trump for his reelection, you know, you could say right now that probably Mattis and Kelly probably won't vote for Trump. Now, this was his chief of staff and his, you know, head of the military there. I mean, come on, people. What the hell does it take for that to happen? I mean, are they going to vote for Trump? I think it's a good question to put out there right now. Now, who do they vote for? Do they vote for Joe Biden? But he's the feel-good quasi-puppet that can do no harm? We've had a lot of harm done to our nation in the past 30 years, people. Tremendous amount of harm done. We have eroded and gutted out what makes America great. We have got to a point where we elected a president to office that didn't believe in American exceptionalism. They didn't believe in American values. Thought we were just one of the team, one of the gang. There was nothing special about America. That is what number 44, Barack Obama, thought of this nation. He didn't hide it, people. He talked about the transformation in all of his speeches. He talked about it around the world. And even more so, more brazen when he was out overseas, you know, outside of the country. He was even more brazen there, where he would slam America and talk to us like we were a piece of shit, just another third world ranked country. That's what I got out of all of that. What about you? There was a time when Trump was a Democrat. Hard to believe that, isn't it? I mean, this man now has become one of the most interesting conservative presidents that we've seen in our lifetimes. He would certainly rival Ronald Reagan. And some people would argue Reagan at times wasn't conservative enough. And certainly Bush, Clinton, Bush, and Obama were far from anywhere near that. These were globalist, leftist, socialist Democrats, if there ever were any. This was it. I mean, in fact, the entire Bush family really belonged more in the Democrat Party. But friends, a lot of those big government operatives belong there because that's what they believe in. They believe in a big operation and apparatus, that's where America is, that it's not really we the people. It's not really limited government. It's not really putting the power where it belongs and putting America first outside of a lot of these international interests and these global groups who want to dominate and really do want to make a one world operation. I mean, I can see it now as clear as daylight. There is no mistaking what their motive operandus is, where they want to go with this thing, people, which really puts us in a delicate position because we make the wrong misstep here, either side of the highway, and wow, I got to tell you, the pain is going to be severe because a civil war today, it would be far different than a civil war back in the 1860s. Far different people. We're an entirely different nation today. The outcome may not be what you wish it to be. Would be ugly. I think that's the concern that most people that look at this thing logically are in. But then many would say, well, what do we got to lose, Malcolm? What the hell are we going to do? Socialize America? Sell it off to the communists? I mean, come on. And I agree with you. We're going to have to fight for everything. Yeah, I mean, that's the way it is. And I know there are a lot of sarcastic people out there who think, yeah, we're loaded, or 2A, we got our gun. I mean, it's not so simple as that, people, being trite and smug and got my guns loaded. And no, I get that. But the stakes are beyond all of that. I mean, the death and destruction of the nation. And in today's environment, if that was to happen, I got to tell you, outside forces would quickly get into play. Far different outcome than would be possibly than what happened in the 1860s, you see. Here's what I want to leave you with and think about this for me, please. And this is really what we got to figure out together here. This pushback that Trump and patriotism is getting in the Republic here and from all over, from all forces and all sides, former presidents, former generals, military operatives, political operatives, people, business, I mean, people that you would have had respect for. These are not extremist viewpoints even, but there is pushback. They do not like this disruptor president. Now, Dell says there, you know, maybe it's just personal. I'm not buying that, people. I don't think it's just because it's a personal thing, and that's, we're missing something. The question is, what are we missing? That's what I can't get my arms around. What are we missing? Because as he says in his op-ed here, these people are selling out the nation. A lot of people would feel that way. So what are we missing here? I mean, you can't tell me for a minute that Trump's style, his brassness, whatever you want to call it, that we can't take that. We would rather blow the nation up because we don't like the man or don't like the way he does certain things. And so we're okay to give the nation to a guy who is sadly crumbling in his senior years with dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever he's got. I don't know. But more than that, even a socialist agenda to the radicals and the Marxists, that's the most important and troubling thing, even beyond Biden, because that's where the forces are. They have eaten up the Democrat Party whole. So it's not just Biden you're buying. You're buying communism. You're buying a Marxist future. Why is it they're willing to take their chances with a Marxist America versus a Donald Trump? Because he is fighting the establishment. See, I'm not offended by what the president is doing at all. I find him a very unique breath of fresh air. He puts it out there all the time. And some things, yeah, they can be hard around the edges, but you know what? He's willing to show that part of the argument or that part of the soul, and he bears it all. And sometimes maybe people would argue to his detriment. I don't know. There are some pretty cutting conversations out there. It happens. And now you see also the pushback with social media companies and technology firms and where they're all revving up for 2020. It is an election like we have never seen before. And as I look at the 2020 election, I see it as a strategic military operation now, if you will. You've got your mainstream media outfits over here. You've got your social media outlets over here. You have your political operatives over here. You've got your past generals and formers over here. And that's all on one side of the battlefield, okay? So visualize that, please. I mean, let's look, you know, just like a movie where you look at the battlefield out there and as the camera scopes in and does a pan scope view of the field. And then on the other side, you have millions and millions upon American civilians, patriotic people who love America, who want to push America forward to continue to be the greatest nation on planet Earth. Now, the question becomes, how many millions and millions of Americans can we get on the opposite side of the field? How many? Because on this side of the field, on the left side of the field, you've got this entire establishment now coming at us. All of it, technology, all of it. Everything I just spelled out. And now on this side of the field, you have the American people. So now you've got to ask yourself, how many of those people can we get there? Because if we don't have a force there, it's over. It's over, people. That's the best way I can tell you. It's over. You can put a fork in it. We are done. We will not be able to take this onslaught of all of this coming with just a handful of millions. We're going to need the mass might of America. We're going to need middle America. We're going to need everybody. And a tidal wave is going to have to hit. That tidal wave is going to have to be red, people. And it's going to have to push over all of that on the left. That's the fight we have here in 2020. That's it right there. Think about that, please. Think also of what else is behind their motive on this left side of the field, please, on the military field. Think about that. Help me out with that, please. We're missing something. I don't know quite what it is. We're missing something. We have to figure out what that something is, people. Thank you for being with me on the mission here. Friends, it's time to get involved and get loud.